This is where the DJ talks. Don't say anything.
Okay.
Each of these media creates a new environment. It creates a new situation for human association and human perception. Any medium at all creates a new pattern, a new atmosphere, a new environment of human perception, which works upon the whole man. It works upon the whole society. That is the effect of a medium. It has that total pervasive effect. That is the message, that social change that is brought about. The content of the medium is never the message, because the content is all to the old medium.
From the vast wilds of the Great White North for the week of February the 15th, 2016, it's TVA, a Canadian perspective on television from north and south of the 49th parallel. I'm Anthony Marco.
And I'm Diane Wild.
And I'm Greg David.
And we would like you to put your television on mute for episode, wait for it, 200 of TVA, the podcast. Oh, and we've got some special plans for you this week. We got a birthday cake with 200 candles on it.
You got the right now.
Dan, you got the birthday cake, didn't you?
Yeah, it's right here.
I thought you were going to send a piece to me in the mail.
I did. You didn't get it yet.
Oh, geez.
There's a very happy postman walking down the street in Hamilton right now eating a cake.
It depends. Is it rooibos cake? Because then he's not that happy.
Hey, it's the best rooibos cake.
It's not just rooibos cake. It's the best rooibos cake. That's actually how they would sell it at like President's Choice.
It's like, yeah.
New from President's Choice. The best rooibos cake. By the way, because it's on February 15th, it is also what, Greg?
Today's Family Day.
No, it is.
No,
it's the Ides of February.
Do we always record on the Ides of something? Because I feel like we've been saying this a lot lately.
All the time.
Hey, it's only 1 month away from the Ides of March. I'm just saying.
That's the only day you were allowed to say that word.
I can say it all the time. I like the fact that I'm probably the only person in podcasting to refer to the 15th as the Ides of something.
In podcasting, I think you might be the only person in the world.
That's quite possible. I find myself unique in that perspective. I guess a bit of apologies. We didn't have an episode last week. To be completely fair, we didn't have any of the TV ABCs kind of in the can and ready to go, and just kind of schedules got away from us. That being said, we're kind of in the time of year where we did talk about a lot of what's happened over the past couple of weeks on the last episode. So I don't think we missed too much in terms of news-wise, and, you know, we're going to catch up a little bit today. And so, you know, any other reflections on the fact that it's our 200th episode, however? I mean, that's pretty impressive, if you ask me.
It is impressive.
You know, that's like, you know, even with the hiatus that we had, 200 episodes, that's a substantial amount of... Most podcasts just die off. This one did die off.
It's like the zombie podcast.
Ah, there you go.
I'm waiting to see some of the syndication money. When does that start? Does that start at 200? Is that 300? What's that?
I believe the syndication money is our Patreon page.
Oh, which, right.
Yes. Oh,
see?
Wow, nice. Sit,
like that.
Which if you go to now I've got to remember it, because so it, you'll notice on the website, folks, there's a different kind of feel. So get the feels. So now there's not only a Patreon page for the podcast, there's a Patreon page for the website. So there's two.
Well, now you're just going to confuse people.
I know. Well, that's not
if you're listening to the podcast, you might want to support the podcast, though.
Exactly. So if you're listening to this podcast and you want to support us on Patreon, you know, just like a buck an episode or maybe more, maybe less. It's up to you. You know, whatever you want to do. If I'm not mistaken, it's patreon.com/TV_EH.
It is. Very good.
And then if you happen to, just because it's new and I'll mention it, if you want to support the website because you're a reader of the website or you subscribe to VRSS, it's patreon.com/TVEH, no underscore.
Yes. And it's all very simple if you just go to the website and click on the links.
I don't see the Patreon link for the, I don't see the Patreon link for the podcast at all.
Because you're not on the podcast page.
Yes, I am.
Wow. Anthony. It's been a long 200 episodes.
Oh, Anthony.
I am on the podcast
I put
page.
Up with this for 200.
I am on the podcast page.
Well, okay, the first podcast isn't even our podcast.
No, that's true.
How did that get in there? So it's oh, well, maybe you have to scroll down a few times.
Scroll down a few times. Wow.
Want to support TVA's work? Become a Patreon.
Yes, okay. So apparently I was right. I feel vindicated.
You just have to look.
Yes. So it's that time, folks. I forgot to mention, this episode, even though that's not because it's our 200th episode, but it's going to be a bit different than usual, because a couple of weeks ago I did an interview with Stephen Bogart, who's the voice of the show Mayday. And if you haven't heard of Mayday, maybe you've heard of it by its other name, Air Crash Investigations, which really spells out what the show's about. But in Canada, it's called Mayday. And this show's going into its 16th year. Like, this Crazy. Thing's been on forever. Yeah. So I spoke with him a bit about the show, and the call quality wasn't great because it was Skype to a landline, and then I had some recording problems. But I got about the first 17 or so minutes of this interview, which it was great. It was good to talk to him. And so we're going to play that at the end of this podcast, because it's really not long enough for kind of a TV ABCs by itself. So if you're listening at the end of this podcast, you'll hear some music, and then you'll hear us come up, and you'll hear my short abridged conversation with Stephen Bogart talking about Mayday and this kind of legendary epic show now. How many Canadian shows can you say have gone on for 16 years?
Yeah, it wasn't
okay. This doesn't say very much about me, but have gone on for 16 years, and I've never heard of it until this year.
Wow.
The episode wasn't cut short because something untoward happened. He wasn't on a plane when he called, was he?
Uh-oh.
No, that okay, wasn't
good.
It at all.
Okay,
however, but it's interesting because it's not over 16 years, by the way. It's 16 seasons.
Okay, right. But whatever.
So it's been over 13, 14 years that it's kind of done. Yeah, so.
And I have to say, I feel like this is a tribute to our 200th episode, because this is how we used to do the podcast. I used to bring an interview, Anthony and I would babble, and then we would have the interview at the end.
Yeah.
And so it's like a throwback Monday to the way we used to do a podcast.
So
in celebration of our 200th episode.
So I'll fill you in on a few stats about Mayday before we jump to that at the end. But it's time for our 200th episode beverage update. And I can't remember what episode we started the beverage updates, Diane.
We started long before we called it the beverage update.
Exactly, because it was just about it was about the fact that you had to have a sip of something, and then it's like, oh, what are you drinking? And I think it evolved from there.
Yes, it was about Anthony mocking me for how many beverages I had at one time too.
So so Diane, for our 200th episode, I hope there's something special.
Well, sadly, there's not, because I didn't know it was our 200th until we started recording. And I carpool with a coworker, and we stopped at the liquor store on the way home because she needed a bottle of wine. And I was like, no, I don't need anything. I still have stuff at home. I should have broken out the bourbon and cinnamon for this. But all I have is things I've had before. So I have a Crown Royal and ginger ale.
Ooh.
And because I discovered that on an Air Canada flight, that was their special drink. So. Mm-hmm. No, I've discovered that I like it. And I have lime sparkling water made with my beloved SodaStream. And I have a chocolate mint rooibos.
Chocolate mint rooibos.
So if you put them all together, that would be a special drink. Like if I just mixed them into one big cup, that would be really special.
I'll give you a dollar.
Nope.
Damn.
Dollar. Come on, at least $5. That's probably $5.
So Greg, you have to beat that.
I can't. I only have two drinks this week, and one of them is water. But the alcoholic one, the last time we recorded, I was drinking an apple cider, hard cider that was made in Toronto, and I can't remember the name of it now. It's in my fridge, but I'm not going to get up. But this week I'm drinking a different type of cider. This one is called Pommy's Dry Cider, and it's Canadian, and it is made in Caledon, Ontario, which is about an hour north of Toronto, up on the escarpment, where there's a lot of horse farms and that type of thing. And so it's good. It's advertised as a dry cider, and it is certainly dry. And it has a nice kind of apple taste to it, and it's got 5% alcohol in it. So you can't really go wrong there. So that's all I've got. Plus, I've got tap water that's been squeezed through a Brita filter. And I've got some bargain Lindt chocolates here from Valentine's Day, so that's what I got. So I don't win.
You don't win.
I don't know. The chocolate kind of puts you over the edge for me.
Well, so anything with chocolate is what you're saying.
Though I do have the chocolate mint rooibos, so maybe we're tied there.
I could float. I'll float one of these little chocolate hearts in my water.
Ew.
What have you got, Anthony?
So here's the thing. This is. this comes with a bit of a story. So one of my well-liked kind of good value bourbons is a bourbon called Elijah Craig Small Batch, and it's a 12-year-old age bourbon. But I found out recently, and this has been all a buzz around the bourbon world.
Sorry.
Aww.
There is a bourbon world, Diane.
Bourbon world. Of course there is.
Listen, maybe in Vancouver we don't have bourbon world. Maybe it's all about like designer coffees and stuff like that. Or shall call them Roybuy?
Now I'm picturing bourbon world like some giant supermarket full of
bourbon.
Oh, I've been to a couple of places like that. It's pretty awesome. I'm just saying. I was at a liquor store down in Texas once where like an entire two aisles were all bourbon, and it was like, and I like it was like the Blues Brothers where the light came in from down through the stained glass windows, and I stared up in rapture. So anyway, Elijah Craig Small Batch 12-year-old bourbon is taking its age statement off of the bourbon, which means that no longer will it be guaranteed only 12-year-old bourbon, that they're actually going to blend in other things as well. But if you're lucky and you're listening to this right now, there are still lots in Canada of 12-year, which if it says 12-year on the front, go out and buy it right now, because it will never be that way again. So I went out and bought like 3 or 4 bottles of this stuff. I already had a bottle, because it's really good bourbon for the price. Like, it's about $45 Canadian, which for a bottle of booze ain't bad. For a bottle of hooch, that's not that bad. And this happens to be really good bourbon. So if you're listening to this and you like bourbon, go out and get the Elijah Craig 12-year small batch, because it's going to disappear and it's not going to be there anymore. And I have to do who was it? Sam Elliott?
Yeah.
Yes.
My Sam Elliott read of Elijah Craig Small Batch. So here we go. About as complete a bourbon as bourbon aroma as you're likely to find. Near miraculous. One of the most beautiful noses found anywhere in the world today. A bourbon to keep in the mouth forever. Perhaps one of my favorites, 5 or 6 bourbons. Perhaps it's best just before bed. Brilliant.
So it has a beautiful nose, and you're supposed to walk around with it in your mouth all the time?
And when you go to bed, apparently.
Elijah Craig, any relation to Jenny or no?
I would think not, but okay. I can't guarantee that. I'm not sure.
Okay.
So go out. If you go into the LCBO site in Ontario, you can actually search and find what stores near you are still carrying the 12-year small batch. So there you go. So that's what we're doing. And that takes us to our calendar.
No.
See?
It's spreading. It's spreading.
Well, he left it for me to do, so I figured I had to do it.
You had to. I was going to wait. I was just going to wait forever.
I figured you would.
And at some point, Diane would have went, why aren't we recording?
Are you
still here?
Well, I never would have jumped in with the sound.
Exactly. Damn you, Wild. So we talked about a bunch of the stuff that was happening a couple of weeks ago. Tonight, as we are recording, there's actually a couple of shows, one which I think we talked about a little bit in the past, which is Anne of Green Gables, was that a single night or a two-parter?
It's a single night, which is part of the problem. It's a two-hour movie, so yeah.
And also The Return of the Next Step.
Yes, that jumped in. That was actually announced after we recorded the last podcast. Okay. So
it's good that we're mentioning it.
Yeah.
For all you Next Step listeners.
That's right. That's right. Or moms of Next Step.
So let me guess. It's on the Family Channel. So The Next Step is about a group of tweens who are dealing with their parents who go to AA meetings.
You're close. It's a dance. It's a dance school.
Damn.
You were so close.
Well, put it this way. If you've gone through dance school, I have to think eventually you might end up at an AA meeting.
Oh, wow.
I'm just saying.
I'm not even going to say anything.
Maybe an NA meeting.
It's a popular show for family. This they hired on a bunch of.
Haven't you seen Black Swan? Come on, everyone, anyone?
Okay, but this is like Black Swan, the first generation. These are kids.
Yeah, these are kids that haven't been they haven't been ruined yet.
Black Goslings? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, Black Goslings. Yes, there you go. Ducklings. Yeah.
Are they related to Ryan Gosling?
Okay, it's on. It's been renewed for a new season.
Greg's had enough.
Had enough.
We just started, and Greg's just had enough.
I'm going to hit mute and drink my palm.
Now, boys. Play nice.
Starting tomorrow night on the 16th, La Dolce Debbie.
Yes, Debbie Travis. The story is up on the website, but I'll give you the short story. Debbie Travis and her husband Hans bought themselves a...
Sorry, what's your husband's name again?
Hans.
And her husband Hans.
Apparently,
it's
my
not,
voice.
It's not even the name; it's the way you say
yeah,
it.
Yeah, apparently, my voice decided to change halfway through saying his name. They decided that they would.
Greg's a big boy now.
That's right. They bought a farmhouse.
You
in
are
Tuscany.
The Peter Brady of this episode, sir.
All right, season one's on Own Canada.
Poor Greg, he's going to leave us.
Screw you guys.
Screw you guys, I'm going home. La Dolce Debbie. I would say that this is probably not in any of our wheelhouses.
Well, I mean, it's interesting. It's a documentary series. I mean, Debbie Travis is known for doing renovation shows, and this is very much just her idea was to rent and or buy and renovate a 13th century villa in Tuscany and renovate it so that women from all over the world could come, spend a whack load of money, and spend a week with her, living the good life and kind of recharging their batteries and figuring out what the next step, not to borrow from the family show, but the next step in their lives is going to be. Because as she said, women today are, you know, they're moving on to new careers. They're not kind of retiring and then just settling down. They want to do more things. And this is about figuring out who you are and what you want to do. I watched the first couple episodes. It's pretty good stuff.
I feel like I might not, if I wanted to rejuvenate, I might not go and spend time with a woman who renovates for a living.
Yeah.
Like, that doesn't seem very relaxing to me.
But do you have 10 grand? Because you can go and report back.
If I had 10 grand, I wouldn't be going to Italy with Debbie Travis.
Aww. It's kind of like Eat, Pray, Spa.
I wondered why you were being quiet. You were thinking of that.
Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe Hans is a masseuse. I don't
Hans.
Know.
He's the chauffeur, actually.
Is he really?
Seriously, yeah, yeah.
Is he really?
Yeah.
Wow, that's quite a relationship.
You know, Greg could be totally making all of this up and we would never know.
I'd be quite happy if that was true. That just says a lot about your married relationship when you're the chauffeur.
Now, wait a minute. Now he's also a producer of all of her shows and helps run the company.
Yeah,
but
producer.
Quotes.
Yeah.
Okay, it's on Own Canada. Tune in Tuesday night.
There you go. On the 17th, this Wednesday, Yukon Gold returns.
Yeah.
On the History Channel, because it's about Yukon Gold.
Yes. And I can't remember which one this is, because honestly, there are a lot of gold shows, aren't there?
There's a lot of gold shows.
There are. It's hard to keep track of them all, but I believe that this is about men and women.
So this is
searching for gold.
Yeah, so there's four mining crews searching for gold over the mining season. But if I'm not mistaken, it's like modern day.
Yeah, yeah. They're basically using front end loaders to dig up the dirt and
like
put
this,
it into it's panning on a massive scale.
Yeah, like this is history in that it was shot a few months ago.
Right.
By the way, this was actually, so it's a Canadian series, but it was bought by National Geographic Channel in the States.
Yes, and maybe you've got the information there. I think it's on season 3 or 4.
Season 4, actually. Yeah.
Yep. Doing well.
So there you go.
It's just so many of those shows; it's hard to keep track.
Ooh, at the end of season 3, there was a special retrospective episode where they looked back over their recaps of the highs and lows of the season. And that's when I believe they had a song by Peter Brady to celebrate everything that had happened. Backup vocals by Hans. And on Thursday this week, on the 18th, everyone's looking forward to it. A series that I probably should watch at some point, because everyone who watches it tells me it's really good and it's like Game of Thrones, is Vikings. The Return of Vikings from History, which there's an appropriate show for history, even though it's not really
fictional.
Historical drama. It's fictional, but still, they're Vikings.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with that. I have never seen this show either.
Like, it's not about the Minnesota Vikings. It's actually about Vikings.
Yeah, Ragnar Lothbrok and his merry band of marauders.
Wow, is that his real name?
Yeah.
There you go.
Season 4 does very well. It's a Canadian-Irish co-pro, and I spoke to a Canadian actress. Her name's Diane Doan, and she was last on the Disney series The Descendants. and she's a new character on Vikings this season, and her character's name is Yidu, and she is a slave who was she was captured in the Red Sea and brought back to Paris to work as a slave in the city. And for those that watched last season of Vikings, they know that the Vikings attempted to take over Paris, and they were somewhat successful. So the plot is they're going to go back again and try and lay waste to Paris and pillage and do all that fun stuff. And anyway, Ragnar is intrigued by Yidu because she is of Asian descent, and we get a little bit of her backstory. And one of the fascinating things about Vikings is that some of it's is based on fiction, but also a lot of it is based on fact as well. So there were characters like Yidu actually in Paris at the time, because they would bring slaves back that had been captured in wars and bring them back to work in the cities and on the countryside. So
I have no doubt that, I mean, they're looking for historical touchstones to base it on. But I mean, you know, so I mean, it's basically the story of these characters, and I'm guessing that as they do research, like I would probably do, you know, you find something that's unique about the culture that you're supposed to be writing about, and you say, hey, that's good for a storyline.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Yep.
So that returns on Thursday, The Return of Vikings. And the only thing we really have to mention next week is the return of Jade Fever on the Discovery Channel.
Yeah. And
I'm guessing that this is kind of like the Yukon Gold of Jade.
Exactly. That is exactly what it is. Well said.
I think that's what their tagline is.
The Yukon Gold of Jade. So instead of Gold Fever, it's Jade Fever, and it's on Discovery, which is completely appropriate because they're trying to discover jade.
That's right, exactly.
See?
What's interesting, well, I don't know if it's interesting. Okay, it's, jeez. I just never had heard about jade, like the way that they dig for jade. It's a little bit different from the way that they do it for gold. So it's interesting from that standpoint. If you don't know how it's done, check it out.
I think I've seen part of an episode, and I didn't even know what I was watching.
Yeah.
But I remember, like, because the idea is they say, oh, you know, that looks like jade there. And then they have to clear out, like, the clumps of earth around it. Because, you know, unlike gold where you're bringing up like some massive rock, which is all going to be probably melted down anyway, with jade, you want to keep like the piece as intact as possible.
Yeah, and it seems like it's closer to the surface than gold is as well. And the streams or the strains are a little bit different. They're set up a little bit differently in the earth. But yeah, it's interesting stuff. Not as high production values as Yukon Gold is. It's a little bit of rough around the edges, but season one was entertaining.
So, Diane, are you going to be watching Jade Fever?
Well, you know, when we started this podcast, I realized that I forgot to RSVP to their Vancouver event. So, no, I have never seen it. And I meant to go to some event that they had, and then I totally forgot.
Geez, you sound a bit jaded, Diane.
Well, I do think, you know, if you're comparing Yukon Gold and Jade Fever just from the titles, like, you don't hear a lot about, you know, the history of jade prospecting and how, you know, cities and countries were built on jade. And it just doesn't have the same allure as perhaps gold does.
I once knew a groupie in 1972 named Jade Fever, actually. That's a different story altogether, though. By the way, it's time we are closing up the calendar.
Yeah.
What was that?
I don't know.
I'll take it.
That actually sounded like a computer closing down. That was actually probably more accurate than the ticker type thing.
That actually sounded like Marvin the Robot from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. The depressed closing of the window. It's actually kind of sounded like Hans, if I'm not mistaken. The final season of CTV's Motive begins on March 22nd. We know that this is a little ways away, but people, I think since the last episode, we've learned the date since the last episode, right? Is that what we've learned? Just like when the season starts?
A Motive?
Yes.
We didn't have official confirmation that it was the last season, I don't think. I think I'd heard that rumor for quite a while.
Okay.
But I don't think it's ever been officially confirmed. I think this was our confirmation.
Oh, okay. So there you go.
Greg.
That's right. I think we'd kind of talked about, we wondered what was happening and whether, you know, because this is the, what number is this? This is the fourth season. And I mean, four seasons is fantastic for any series, whether it's Canadian or American, and once you start getting up to three and four, you start to wonder whether that'll be, you know, the end of the road. So yeah, like Diane said, this was confirmation that it was it was the end. And I don't know, Diane, was this earlier, having it come back in March? I feel like it was more of a summer show last season.
No, that is actually when they expected it to be on. And I think, I mean, the confirmation is important because I had heard rumors that both Saving Hope and Motive were going to be, and, you know, from rumors from fairly, you know, sources that I would trust, but it turned out not to be true for Saving Hope. So, or at least they changed their minds or something. So, you know, the confirmation is definitely always necessary when you hear those rumors.
And wasn't it, what, it was 2 years ago that they did the season premiere after the Super Bowl or something like that?
Yeah. Yeah, two or three.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
But then if I remember correctly, I mean, that's when they did like a sneak, wasn't it a sneak preview season premiere? Like, I don't know if they started the entire season then or not. I forget. I'm trying to remember back. I'm not too sure.
Let's just make it up. I don't know.
Let's just pretend. But if you go way back.
Look, way.
I think it was actually either the first or second episode of the TV ABC's version of the podcast. We talked with Dennis Heaton,
yeah.
And you know, we talked about during that episode about the, you know, how much it is, because you're dealing with a very unique premise on this show, having to be architects of these kind of stories over and over again. And after you get up past a certain amount of seasons, you're thinking to yourself, how many of these can we do without starting to look like we're repeating the same stuff over and over again? So, I mean, I guess that's the case with any procedural, but not only is this a procedural, but this is like a very specific kind of procedural as well.
Well, it's got to be harder when you know who the killer is and you know who the victim is right up front. Yeah. You know, it seems to me that's got to be a hard way to construct a story for sure.
Yeah, you're already showing your cards, yeah.
Do you know what I learned this morning? That starting, from 6 to 7, Bravo airs The Listener, and then from 7 to 8, they air Motive.
Wow.
It's like their CanCon block when people are too groggy to like actually be watching TV, really.
Bravo. So there you go. We'll probably talk a little bit more about this as our calendar flips into March. Have a little bit more to say, and we may learn some more details about maybe some of the stuff that's going to be happening this season. I see that they're going to have a guest appearances this season from John Heder from Napoleon Dynamite.
Keep going.
Will Sasso from Shameless.
Yes.
And Tommy Flanagan from Sons of Anarchy, whose guest stars in a recurring role as Interpol agent Jack Stoker. Jack Stoker.
Tommy Flanagan was great on Sons of Anarchy. I really enjoyed him.
Jack Stoker.
That's how I have to say it. I hope they say it that way.
And in fact, I think there should be a spinoff series called Interpol agent Jack Stoker.
It's just the name.
Yes, exactly. At least his name's not Jack Stroker, because that would be a totally different concept. We're starting to talk about Hardwood and Wicked Beaver all over again.
A whole different show. That would be a Bravo show.
Spin-off, yeah.
Exactly. So we also have a little bit more news about the show Cardinal, which we've talked about a couple of times now. This was the one that was built on based on a series of novels, I think, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah, by author Giles Blunt. Yes, they headed into production. And actually, some new news to this is that we knew that this was a Bell Media production that was going to be broadcast on CTV. But now the Quebec station Super Écran has jumped on board. So they'll be broadcasting that to French-speaking Canada. I think we talked about this at the time. We knew that Billy Campbell and Karen Vanasse were both going to star in it.
I think that's about all we knew at that point, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah,
I think you're right.
And so, I mean, it looks like they're starting to shoot in Sudbury.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think this has anything to do with the fact that they've moved Hard Rock Medical out of Sudbury?
They're also
shooting in North Bay, Ontario.
Yeah, they're also shooting in North Bay. The thing with Hard Rock Medical, and I watched the press conference last week, was that they teamed up with Canadore College, and I don't know if that has anything to do with, like, it could be totally unrelated, because the kids they've employed are, there's 75 students from Canadore's broadcast classes that are going to be involved in the production of Hard Rock Medical, so it's going to be kind of a learning, you know, kind of a partnership between the school and the show. So I don't know. I think there were
a few things in Sudbury. I think it just has to do with tax credits. I don't think Hard Rock Medical took up that much space. Like, it's not, you know, it's not like an entire industry was built around Hard Rock Medical.
Yeah, no, for sure. I was just thinking, like, in Sudbury, I mean, because that's become like the center of like a few different shows we've talked about over the past year. And I'm thinking, how much resources do they actually have in Sudbury to shoot at like any amount of different series at one time? I mean, if you're staggering them all, that's one thing.
Right.
Well, yeah, if they're 6-episode series, then yeah. That's not such a consideration.
Shouldn't be too bad.
Yeah, and it's interesting because it says that Cardinal's using the Northern Ontario Heritage Fund, and that's the same as Hard Rock Medical because it's all in that that large plot of land in Northern Ontario, and it was $800,000 that the fund was putting towards Hard Rock Medical. So I'm wondering how much they're putting towards Cardinal. I mean, obviously there's all these other funds that are helping out as well, but man, I'd love to know the numbers. Maybe I'm a geek that way, but I'd love to know how much. Like when they told me how much Hard Rock Medical was, I'm like, okay, well, how much? $800,000, that seems like a lot, but I guess it's not really a lot, is it?
Well,
is it a lot?
I don't know.
No, I mean
looking at the funds, the Northern Ontario Heritage Fund Corporation.
Yeah. Yep.
Like that's a new one that you don't see that often except for a show like this.
Right.
Canada Media Fund, that's fine. Cogeco Program Development Fund, fine. Ontario Film and Television Tax Credit, expected. Canadian Film or Video Production Tax Credit, expected. But that Northern Ontario Heritage Fund Corporation, that's kind of a new one.
Yeah. And an episode of, like, an hour-long episode can cost, like, $2 million or, you know, probably not in Canada. It's probably more like, you know, at least no more than a million. I don't know.
Right.
But that probably doesn't go very far when you're talking about a whole season.
But it seems like there's a lot of people who have really liked the books who are looking forward to this. And so hopefully that will be some crossover. And hopefully it's going to be one of those things where, you know, you don't have to be too steeped in any of the knowledge of the books to just kind of pick it up. You would have... hope that they're going to kind of guide you along, and hopefully they're not going to make it too simple that the people who've read the books are going to go, oh, geez, I know all this already.
Yeah, I mean, I think the advantage of this one is that this is based on the first novel, 40 Words for Sorrow, and that's the first time that we see John Cardinal, the character of John Cardinal. So I'm assuming that they're going to introduce everything and, you know, move it along and introduce the characters. We also got the story, has got the casting information for the rest of the cast. I really think that this is a smart move. Giles Blunt is an established name, and I think that with all the other books that he's got, you can certainly do this whole 6-episode miniseries type of thing every couple of years. I think it's great. Yeah. And I also wonder if, you know, we were talking earlier about Saving Hope and Motive and wondering which one of those might be back and which one might not be back. I wonder if the fact that Cardinal's being made had any kind of impact on the fact that this is going to be the last season for Motive.
Hmm. Yeah, probably. I mean, they probably knew that they had something else in the wings, and, you know, God forbid they have too many Canadian shows on the title. But I agree. I think this seems like a smart one because it probably has a bit of a built-in audience because of it coming from, you know, a popular series of books. And the casting is really good. I mean... I would watch both of these people, Billy Campbell and Corinne Vanasse, however you pronounce it. I think, you know, it's not really my genre, but I think it's a smart move.
I like the fact that they're experimenting too with, even CTV is experimenting with series length, you know, six part, which, you know, will be easy for somebody to marathon when they switch it over to whatever streaming service they're going to put it on. And like, if they want to sell the DVD, they can sell like a 2-disc DVD set, and like, it'll kind of all be there. And, you know, that's not a bad thing. Or they can show it as a 2-night miniseries.
Yeah.
But also, I mean, like Greg said, it doesn't commit them to anything, but there are a lot of other books that they can keep bringing this back. And basically it could be like a continuing series, only they don't need to, you know, have that promise to fans that they're going to continue.
If they do the 6 episodes and it works really great, they've got that option. So
yeah, it's like I keep saying about CBC. I mean, the Book of Negroes was a big success for them, but they can't exactly go on to the Book of Negroes 2. So
yes,
they're sort of hooped in that, okay, great, we found an audience, and now bye-bye.
Yeah, exactly. Well, there you go. So, I mean, that's obviously it's going to be one of those shows that we keep hearing probably about over the next year or so. As we build up to whenever I don't know if they've actually predicted as to when this is going to hit the air or not, but there have been plenty of those shows over the last little while that we somehow seems that we're talking about for 1 or 2 years before it actually gets to the air. And we started talking about this one, I think, at least about 4 or 5 months ago.
Yeah. As of right now, it just says it's going to be part of CTV and Super 8 Canal's 2006-17 schedule. So yeah, that could be anywhere from fall till next winter until we see it.
Yeah, there you go. So we've kind of wrapped up the news for this week. I want to spend some time. Normally, if those of you who listen to the TV ABC's podcast know that I usually do a little bit of cold open and bio and stuff like that. But instead of doing that this time, when you hear us leave today after we do our normal ending stuff, you'll hear the opening theme to the TV ABC's podcast, and we'll go into the 15 or 17 minute discussion that I have with Stephen Bogert to tell you a little bit about May Day. It's going into its 16th season, which is absolutely staggering. And it basically, what the show does is it investigates air crashes, near crashes, hijackings, bombings, other disasters, using reenactments. And Stephen Bogert is kind of like the voice behind all of this, the narrator. And we talk a little bit about that going into it. We talk a little bit about some of the other stuff that he's done and some of his background in theater and some of the other television work. So that's coming up after we're done here. So please listen to that. When you hear the closing theme, it's not actually a closing theme. Think of it as a reopening theme.
Mm.
I like to think of it that way. I don't know. But it's actually like it won a Gemini Award back in 2010. And it won a Screenie in 2015 for a Best Picture Editing in a Factual Programmer Series.
Sorry.
Wow, thanks.
Dan, I mean, I was going to say, wow, and I'd never heard of it, but that explains it.
Dan Hawks really thanks you for that, Diane.
Sorry.
Wow.
It's pretty impressive the number of countries that this broadcasts in, because it's in France, it is in Holland, and like you said, National Geographic. It's 144 countries and 26 languages.
Yeah, because pretty much because not a lot of it is dialogue-based.
Right.
And so much of it is narrative based. I mean, you can have any number of narrators do it in their native language, and it's going to work out fine. It's known as Air Crash Investigations in Australia, South Africa, United Kingdom, Asia, and some European countries, and Air Emergency and Air Disasters in the United States. Because in the United States, it has to be, you have to put the word disasters or emergency into absolutely everything.
Right.
I think if I watched this show, I would never fly again, and I like my vacations. Yes.
So there you go. You're going to be hearing that very soon after we wrap up here. But this has been the 200th episode, folks. Episode 200, the bicentennial episode on the Ides of February.
That's not a thing.
I think it's a thing. I'm just saying. I'm thinking it's, let's see, 200th episode. So it's CC. That's what episode this is. It's CC.
Oh.
Uh-huh. Like, yes, yes.
Wow.
Exactly.
You're really reaching for this, Anthony.
I'm trying to keep this 200th episode exciting, because eventually that cake's going to get here.
And someone's got to.
Well, exactly. Greg, why don't you tell people where they can find you when you're not hanging out here enjoying a beverage and waiting on cake?
Sure. I'm a partner at the TVA website, where you can read all of mine and Diane's stories at TV-EH.com. I'm also co-manning the TVA Twitter account, which is TV_EH, or my own account, which is Greg_David. I can also be found this upcoming weekend. I'll be going to PodCamp, my second PodCamp. We won't be presenting this year. We presented last year about getting the website going again using Indiegogo. But I will be attending a bunch of sessions. And actually, Diane, I didn't tell you this, but I have booked a gig. I think it's going to be a weekly gig with AMI Radio going in on Fridays to discuss Canadian television. So,
That's the accessible media people.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yep. They're the ones that do Four Senses, which is a cooking show. And they also show Mr. D and Murdoch Mysteries, Trailer Park Boys. And they do it all with a described video for the visually impaired. They also do the Olympics and Toronto Blue Jays games and the Pan Am games. So, yeah. So I will let you know how that goes.
Well,
what about you, Diane? Where can we find you?
Well, all of those things except for Greg's personal account and the AMI show. I'm on Twitter at DeeKayW. And that's kind of all I got. Where can you be found, Anthony?
You can find me at PodCamp as well next weekend. And I will be doing a follow-up session with Bob Goyetch from our highly successful session last year. Entitled The Session at PodCamp That's About Podcasting. because
that's a very creative title.
Well, if you look at all most of the sessions of PodCamp, they're about how to monetize your brand, and we really don't care about that much. So we'll be talking there. If you listen to this podcast and you see us, come over and say hi. Maybe Greg will be in the room too, and I'll go, "Hey, Greg, how's it going, Greg?"
Please do it in that voice when you see me.
Call him Hans. He likes to be called Hans.
You guys have to take a selfie and post it for me.
Okay. We'll take a selfie. So you can find all of my other podcasts at anthonymarco.com. You can find me on Twitter at Anthony Marco. And you can find all the past episodes of this podcast by going to tv-eh.com and click on the podcast thing at the top. And if you'd like to help us out in a little monetary way, go to Patreon, patreon.com/tv_eh. Wow, that's it. 200 episodes in the book. Remember, after you hear the music, you're going to hear my discussion with Stephen Bogert from whether it's called May Day in Canada or air emergency or air disasters or air crash investigations. If you're listening from around the world, you'll probably recognize the voice before you recognize the name of the show. I think that's how it would go. Anyway, say goodbye, everyone.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
That wraps up another episode for this week. And now back to your regularly scheduled programming. If I'm not mistaken, I can't even recall what season this is of May Day. All I know is that this show has been on for like way longer than I originally thought.
It has been on for longer than I ever thought it would as well. We're just started airing the 15th season.
Wow.
And the 16th cycle or season they've been working, the hardworking staff have been working on that for the last few months, and I start my 16th season a couple weeks from now.
Right.
So I'm usually the final piece of the puzzle.
Sure.
And then we do, over the next 6 or 7 months till August, I guess. No, I guess it's 5 months. Every 3 weeks or so, the next episode will be ready at that point in post-production. So yeah, going into the 16th season.
Now, when you do you come in and record like several episodes at once?
No, just the one. Okay. Just the one. In my first season, we did 2 episodes a day, and that was a bit grueling. as fun as it was, because the first season, actually, we recorded it in Montreal.
Right.
And so it actually made for an interesting... I wouldn't get the script until the morning. It would be FedEx to me. And then I'd get in the cab and I'd be flown to Montreal to record. So I was actually reading the script of May Day on the plane on my way to... And I thought, I'm either tempting fate or fate is telling me that this is okay.
It'd be horrible to be reading over your shoulder as well if they were sitting beside you. It's like...
I was a little aware of that, I guess. But I'm often asked, you must be afraid to fly, and it's actually completely the opposite. I've become a very confident flyer, and the show has, shown me all the safety protocols and all the, fail-safes that go into it and how detailed everything is, so it's made me a very confident flyer. So anyway, the last 14 seasons we've recorded in Toronto, but we just do the one episode at a time now.
So you do the one episode at a time, is that like consecutive days, one episode, or every couple of weeks, every few weeks?
Once we start the recording season, I guess I call it, it's once every 3 weeks.
Okay.
And then they put the the polish and the finishing touches, editing and the next episode. So they've got, each episode is in a certain level of development right now.
Right.
And then in a couple of weeks, the very first episode will be, hopefully, ready for the narration track.
Now, you say you often don't get the scripts until pretty soon before. Do you have a working knowledge of some of the incidents before the season starts? Like, are you involved at all in the... in the writer's room where they're coming up with a bunch of the stuff?
No, I would have loved to have been, but no, I don't. Occasionally I'll get you know, word when they're preparing over looking at these incidents and that kind of thing. But a lot of them are surprises to me.
Right.
And I'm often, you know, we'll get one and I'll say, oh, right, this incident. Why didn't we do this one before? So I'm completely in the dark. I'm a fan and a spectator on that level as well. I don't find out until, you know, just before the season starts, sort of what the lineup is going to be.
And it's got to be a bit of, I mean, how can you not consider it anything but a huge success story in a Canadian television market where most shows from year to year, they consider themselves lucky if they get a second year, blessed if they get
Absolutely.
A third year. I mean, to go on to 16 years with a steady gig is got to be, I mean.
I think my name is mud to other actors, I think, to have such a steady gig. But, you know, we never, you know, it was each season, I guess I prepare myself, okay, this is the last one. Right. And I started doing that, you know, from 2003, whenever we first started this. You know, okay, it's 8 episodes for this season or 10, and that'll be it. And actually, a few times, there was pretty much word that we thought it was done, and then it got sort of resurrected. Or there were sort of rumblings going on behind the scenes that I was never privy to.
Right.
But just as a way for an actor to never count their chickens before they're hatched,
for sure.
I tell myself that, okay, season 7, that's it. And, you know, and then we get word, and I go, oh, lovely bonus. And there have been 15 bonuses. I'm extremely fortunate that way to basically be included in the ride. I'm the beneficiary of the whole staff's hard work for the last 15 years. I mean, they've been working on each episode for months and months.
Sure.
And then I come in and, you know, I do my thing. But, I am certainly the beneficiary of, their hard work. So I'm very grateful.
It's had to have put you in a couple of positions at least where someone has considered you an expert on this.
Because
you're the authority voice, right? And they think, well, if he's the voice,
yeah.
He must know all of this stuff.
Yeah, and I hate to disappoint people, so I just usually say something vague and, you know, mysterious. I hope you're not looking for technical expertise or opinion about various unsolved mysteries, because, like I said, I'm a spectator and a fan as well.
I'm not.
I mean, I've learned a few things over the years, you
sure.
know, but certainly not the aviation expert.
If you don't mind me jumping way back, because, I mean,
sure.
this show isn't the only show that you're doing. I mean, you've got a resume that goes a couple of decades back.
You're calling me old, but that's
I'm not
fine.
Calling you old. I'm I'm literally seeing your first credit on your IMDb page is 1995.
Ah.
So it's right. not that far of a stretch back. So I'm curious.
Okay.
Where did you get the acting bug originally?
Originally, I think, you know, I'm the youngest of 6 kids, and just from play, you know, playing with my siblings, and we used to act out TV shows, you know, that we would hear, and, you know, whether it was the original Star Trek series or Gilligan's Island, you know, just kids goofing around.
Sure.
And actually, one of my older brothers did plays in high school,
mm-hmm.
so I was, you know, just a toddler, and we would go to see the high school play that my brother was in, and I thought that was kind of neat, and, you know, so I think that was part of the seeds being sown. I think I was raised Catholic as a child, so the pageantry of, you know, the mass.
Yes,
attracted me to theater as well.
Yes. You're talking to an altar boy right now, so
somebody
who was an altar boy anyway. So
that's what. So originally, my interest. 95 was my first film and TV credit, but I had done Stratford before that.
Okay,
so. Yeah, so theater was the first kind of interest, and then film and TV after that.
After starting TV in 95, did you ever wander back towards the stage again, or was it pretty much TV after that?
I went back to Stratford for one more season in 97. That was my last season there. And then I've done a couple of independent plays in Toronto since then, but that was basically, I was either cajoled or asked and, right. you know, to do that. But my focus and sort of the agreement with my agent was staying in Toronto as a base and focus on film and TV. I kind of felt like I was playing catch-up with other actors, my peers. Like, since I went to Stratford right at the theater school, my friends and peers they immediately became unemployed Toronto actors.
Right.
So while I was employed at Stratford, I had no involvement in the film and TV world, so I felt like I was playing catch-up there. So I really wanted to let my agent know that I was focused on film and TV, and it became the unknown. Hey, what's this about? And so I decided to focus on that. And then when you're not really part of the Toronto theater scene, and you're, you know, so you sort of get forgotten about, I guess. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't pursuing it. So, but a few things have popped up, you know, in the last while, and, you know, I consider it. I was asked to audition for something a couple of weeks ago, but it just wasn't going to work out, so I didn't. But yeah, occasionally someone asks. But
there's a little bit of a draw sometimes there that you think it'd be nice to do.
Yeah, I consider everything.
Yeah.
I consider everything, and I don't want to say I just do this or I just do that. I would probably be very reluctant to leave the city to do something. Maybe Stratford or Shaw, sure, if it was the right thing. But I probably for theater, who knows? But you never say never.
For sure. Now, I mean, going back to some of the early work and some of the work since then, I've often commented in a lot of my conversations with Canadian actors that you go onto a site like IMDb and you see this long list of appearances, but sometimes those can represent like less than a day's work.
Oftentimes,
even though it looks like, you know, it may have been four or five different jobs in a year, and you would think, well, that's fantastic. I mean, literally, that might not mean that much work, actually. Is it still
right?
Still that tough a slog in the Canadian television industry, unless you catch onto a series as a regular, I'm guessing.
It's true. It can be varied. I think I've been fairly fortunate, most of the things I go out for are interesting, and I've been doing it for long enough that I won't go out for the, you know, the 2-3 line kind of role.
Right.
So, but I'm not sure where the question is now. we can edit that.
Well, I guess I'm just wondering. It's like, I mean, how long did in your mind did it stay that tough? Like, where it was just like wondering, you know, living from that day to day. Like, of course, it's great now that you've got, the 16-year steady gig that you've been doing. But beyond that, does it ever ease up as a Canadian television actor to not worry about it being just, you know, the occasional day to day gig or hopefully landing on a series here or there?
Yeah. Well, you know, I guess at my age, if things aren't working out for you, you probably should have left already. and sadly, over the years, I've some friends and, you know, peers have decided to leave the biz.
Right.
And it's usually the right decision. And there's no shame in that. It's, you know, you give it a go. And because at some point you have to say, well, it's not just financially, but if it's not stimulating you creatively and you're not working on things, projects that are interesting, why do it? I mean, there are lots of other interesting things to do in life. So I guess I've been fortunate enough that, yes, I've had this steady gig with Mayday, and voice has been a sort of an under the radar kind of supplement to the career. You know, there have been some nice, interesting signposts along my acting career in the film and TV world, you know, that have always kept me interested. So, you know, some years are better than others, and some gigs, sure, you take just for the money, and sometimes it's just like going to the gym, you know, you work on something just to keep working and to keep active and to be part of it, and there's nothing wrong with that. That's part of what, you know, the journeyman aspect of this industry is. I think Canadians have that sensibility and awareness that, you know, you do the job, and I think that's from maybe an English or British tradition. I think English actors feel the same way. You know, you take the job, you do the job, and you keep and you keep putting one foot forward, and, you know, as long as it's interesting and, you know, there's other things in life, you know, you keep going. So,
well, it seems that almost comes from it's almost like a very stage like tradition of, you know, I just want to be in the company next year, so to speak. Like, keep me in the company. If I can stay in the company, no matter what I'm doing, at least I'm there, kind of thing.
Well, you know, with as long as it does stay interesting.
Yes.
You know, I've been fortunate enough that there have been enough, as I said, sort of called them signposts and, you know, little plums that, you know, were really interesting and stimulating and successful, I guess, for my reasons, you know, that they fuel the fire for, you know, for the regular kind of jobs, you know, that you do. So
now, do you, like many actors, are you also always in the back of your mind kind of developing your own next projects as well?
I wish I had that discipline. I mean, there are a couple of scripts in the desk drawer, you know, that I should polish or, you know, dust off and do a third draft on, kind of thing. But I never developed the discipline to just keep doing that. And I guess part of it was the kind of networking thing that is needed for, you know, to shop those scripts around. I'm not really one for that kind of side of the industry. And I know that about myself. So, I mean, you know, once I've got a chunk of time, I might revisit a couple of the scripts that I've started, and I mean, they're finished, but they need another draft, kind of thing, as they always do. But a couple of the independent plays that I did over the years, I took a backseat or a secondary producing kind of role, but not the go-getter producer kind of thing, just because I knew that that wasn't me.
Sure,
you know. So mostly an actor.
Okay, so I'm curious. One of the things that we talk about when we talk about this idea of the journeyman experience and going through it is, do you ever walk into? Is it one of those situations where you walk into it? You said you've been lucky enough now that you can you know, at least not take the two or three line roles. But do you ever walk into a situation where, you know, you take a look at the script and you just say, oh my God, what have I gotten myself into? I'm not asking you to actually specifically point it out.
I will never give you a specific. But
no,
yes.
I don't want a specific. No.
yes. But, you know, there have also been amazing surprises.
Right.
You know, like I like to put it this way, you know, you could be playing Hamlet.
Yeah.
But if everyone else is insufferable, what's the point of doing it?
Yes.
You know, like it all depends on the mix of people. So in the last X number of years, there are definite examples of that. But then there was another example that I had. Oh, God, I don't know if I should do this. I don't know. And it was one of the most enjoyable projects ever.
Right.
Really. So you never know. It's, you know, it's all the mix of people in there. You know, their intent and their, you know, if they're of like mind and sensibilities and all that kind of thing. So,
and I have to imagine after you know, doing it for a number of years, you eventually start to run into the same people, and the Canadian industry, many ways, especially around Toronto, becomes cloistered to a certain degree. And, you know, you've got directors you've probably worked with before, and writers you worked with before, and actors you worked with before, and you're probably running into them year after year after year on different shows.
That's always a mark of success too. Like working with, you can work with anyone once, but if you get hired again.